Well, I've been doing spoken poetry now for longer than I can remember, and it's an opportunity to float words on air. And for me, doing that is sort of like making an ephemeral sculpture. You get to create something and fill a volume and then watch decay. It's a kind of wonderful thing. So I'm going to read for you the title poem from my new book, The Underwater Typewriter, which is coming out on Pelicanesis Press on September 25th. And this poem is called The Underwater Typewriter. She found me gathering urchins in the cove at the feet of towering yellow kelp, rising quick to the surface with a stone to crack the captured quarry on my chest as I rode the pulsing swell off Point Lobos. Your whiskers are gray. You must have stories, she laughed, trailing me like a hungry gull. Tell me your tales and the ways of Big Sur while the sun still sparkles on these waters. I opened with legends of the Ohlone, told her of great grizzlies fishing the streams, of stocky square-rigged galleons carrying explorers and settlers up the coast, of families who tended the Point Sur Light, of writers, of hermits, of medicine men, of musicians and poets and ranchers and thieves high in the Santa Lucias. You seem to know a lot about humans, she whistled, splashing her hind flippers. Perhaps you will write it all down for me. I turned, diving deep into the kelp bed. When I reached the ocean floor, she was there, laughing gently, opening her seal coat, placing a round-keyed royal typewriter in a rock cradle, in Canton. Please begin.
Mark, I first got to get to know you through your spoken poetry on a CD that I listened to on a long commute I had back then. So do you consider yourself a performer, a writer, or is it something of both?
At this point, it's something of both. I spend a lot of time working very carefully to bring words to the page and to have them function well on the page as poems. And I'm also very, very concerned with how do you put words in air? How do you bring them to people in a way that makes them come alive in the room? And how do you enjoy the differences between speaking a poem and performing it in public and enjoying a poem on the page?
There are two very different skills. Spoken poetry can be a very different skill than written poetry. Is it possible to be truly excellent at both? And in your case, what grew out of which?
Those are great questions, and I really appreciate them. Yes, it's possible to be excellent in both, and it's possible to grow in both your whole life, which is a wonderful thing. For me, the spoken part was always there from a very, very early age. I process words auditorially more than visually. And so for me, I hear the words before I write them most times. And the two interacted since I was a small child. I became fascinated with spoken word, though, when I was about 14 years old, and I heard Tom Waits on a record called Nighthawks at the Diner, and he did some spoken bits there, and I never heard anything like it and just fell completely in love with it. And I think from that point on, I wanted to find ways to do things that were in my own voice, but that grew from that inspiration.
And a lot of spoken poetry is just the poetry, but in your case, on your CDs, you often bring in music as well.
That's right. I find that having a rapport with a musician, especially someone or a group of musicians that know how to comp you or accompany you, get behind you, and play, expands this space for the poetry. It makes you attend to beat and meter. And it also gives you an opportunity to explore the rests, the spaces between the words. Oftentimes, poets who speak or read and haven't given thought to the music and the poetry don't play the rests enough. And oftentimes, the spaces between words are more important than the sounds of the words themselves.
Now, you're also a theater producer. I imagine that can very much go hand in hand with being good at spoken poetry.
The two do go hand in hand, and it's kind of fun to do events. I've been producing less theater lately, but yeah, when I have a chance to do a theater event, it's a wonderful thing. And again, watching people perform, seeing them perform, helping them bring their sound and their movement into the room, it's wonderful for poetry because it helps me understand how people physicalize words. And if someone's reading my poems on the page, I want to be able to know how they might internalize, how they might physicalize, how they might vocalize what they're reading.
Now, we're here to talk about The Underwater Typewriter, your new poetry collection, Written Word. But when you look at these poems, they're often very visual, too. So there's that we hear them, we see them, but the shapes, the actual physical shapes that you give to some of your poems can be very interesting, too.
Thank you. Yeah, I do have a few shape poems in there, and sometimes giving the poem a shape or a body or a curve is another way to bring the poem into a reader's senses. And when I do shape a poem, I try not to do it in a trite way or a little literal way, but I try to give them an arc that they can move along that, again, connects with their sight and with their bodies and in some ways amplifies the meaning and the sound of the lines that they find in the body of the poem.
How did this journey to this book happen? Has it been a long time coming? Is this a collection of some of the things that worked on stage for you? What is this collection about?
That's a good question. I think the collection is about how we work our way with dignity through very, very difficult problems, how we find voice in circumstances where we faced cruelty, betrayal, chance, loss, and how we bring that voice to the surface with love. It's been a very long process bringing this book together, more than a decade. And some of the pieces I've performed on stage, some were essentially written for that purpose. Most, though, are poems that were written for the page, which at time I brought onto the stage in readings. And they come from a variety, wide variety of sources.
I'm seeing the title as kind of a metaphor. You're writing underwater in some deep hidden place and bringing it to the surface. Is that kind of the idea there?
Yeah, that's right. It's about writing in a place. James Joyce had a line about artists as they're emerging in their work. And he was talking primarily about young artists, but it can also be artists at different stages in their lives as they're moving through and into new things. And he talked about silence, cunning, and exile. And so this is a series of poems that comes from a hidden place, moving toward the light after a period which required a kind of cunning silence and exile.
And you've been posting some fascinating pictures on Facebook. I've been watching your page for The Underwater Typewriter, and people have been sending you all kinds of photos of these vintage typewriters.
Yeah, they're just wonderful. Someone took a photograph of a vintage typewriter in Monterey, California, and gave it to me and then put it up on the page. And I invited other people to join in because I like that so much. And they've been posting wonderful old typewriters, some of them in staged settings, some just images of the typewriters. But yeah, people really have an affinity with the keys.
Now, when I look through your background, Mark, you've been the Narragansett Beer Poet Laureate and a poetry whore with the New York Poetry Brothel. Say what?
Well, I'll start with the poetry brothel. So two wonderful people who now run the New York Poetry Society, Stephanie Berger and Nick Adamski, graduated from the New School, and they had sort of grown tired of academic poetry readings, and they wanted something with greater depth than slam poetry. And one day Stephanie said, well, what do I really like? And she said, I love poetry and I like bourbon and I like sex. How do I put them together? And so she came up with this idea with Nick's help of a 1920s bordello, a prohibition era bordello or a Paris between the wars bordello, where rather than hiring prostitutes, one would hire a poet for private readings. And
I like it.
It's fantastic. And so they brought it together as an immersive theatrical experience where each poet is a character with a backstory. Everyone is in costume. There are all kinds of other characters populating the room, magicians, tarot card readers, burlesque dancers, strange people with strange stories. And the poetry brothels typically run from about 9 at night until 1 or 2 in the morning. And as a poetry whore, you have a chance to read poetry one-to-one to people in a very, very intimate setting.
Kind of a lap dance of poetry, eh?
A lap dance of poetry, exactly. And it's profoundly intimate. And it's profoundly revealing about you as a person, you as a poet, how your poem changes when you inhabit a character, and what happens to the person you're reading to in the moment.
That's a really neat idea. I'd love to see that. So you also identify as a creative development advisor. What's your best advice to artists?
My best advice to artists is to be true to yourself, be true to your work, and work carefully to master your craft. Take your time and let it unfold. And if you do, you'll enjoy every moment.
And I see on your website that you work with a lot of different type of artists, not just writers. There's musicians in there, people from the theater. So what does a creative development advisor do?
That's a great question. Well, I do several things. I oftentimes help people break through creative blocks. If they're stuck on a project or a line of work isn't working for them, I help them work through why and bring the project to completion or master the set of tools that they're looking to master. Other times they may go through a major life transition, a marriage, a divorce, loss of a family member, moving from early career into midlife, or coming to toward the end of a career. And I help people move across that transition from one phase of life to another. And what we find often is, as we make that transition from one stage of life to another, the grammar and vocabulary that we were using as artists that was successful for us no longer is. So we need to discover new tropes, we need to discover new structural metaphors, we need to discover new ways of working. And that can be a terrifying thing for people. And I help them work through that fear and find themselves again with a steady line to their voice, but oftentimes using new tools and new ways of accessing and expressing it.
So as we return to the underwater typewriter, and I'd love to close with a second reading from that, but in writing it, did you feel that you accomplished that you brought yourself up to the surface and helped yourself to be seen or maybe even to be healed?
Yes, I think all of that's true. The book took the metaphor quite literally in the way it was organized, the poems I brought to it and the way I expressed it. And I wanted people reading it to have a sense of what it's like to come to the surface and find light. And if the book's successful, hopefully it will do that, or individual poems will do that for readers.
Any plans of returning to your native Ann Arbor for any readings?
I would love to. If there's a way to come out to Michigan, as you say, I'm a native-born Michigander. I'd love to come out and do some readings. And another thing I do, which I love, is I do workshops called From Page to Stage, where I help poets and writers who haven't learned the tools of voicing words in air to do that. And I love working with students. So yeah, I'd love to spend some time in Michigan and do some readings and perhaps help some younger writers help them learn to give flight to their words.
So I'd love to hear another poem as we close the interview, Mark, from The Underwater Typewriter.
Well, this poem is a short one. It's called "Of You," and it's more of a performance piece. And it sort of combines a reverie, if you will, involving Dexter Gordon, the jazz musician, Chet Baker, the famous vocalist and jazz trumpeter, and their sounds, along with someone I was in love with when I wrote the poem. And it goes like this. Sinking into Dexter, he spreads his tenor across the night. A track of starry notes, milky light and smoke. A triplet played, a bebop line, a note hanging time. In the corner of a memory begun, in a quiet run, in a soft room. At play with exhaustion, completely lost in a dream of you.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Zinta. It's been a delight.